Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Helping you unwind after a long day of work.
I think he's kind of a boob.
Can't really take the days off as a person. Can't go out there and be a moron. It doesn't work like that.
The Nightcap.
We're eating their food.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
What's up, everybody? The Nightcap back on the airs. Friday. Football Friday here on WGR. We are a couple of days out from Bills versus Dolphins, under 48 hours away. Under 48 hours away as well from pregame coverage, myself and Nate Geary at 10 a.m. Prior to that, Jeremy White and Nate at 8. My brother Lou DiBiase with the fantasy show from 7 to 8. I got a fantasy article up, by the way, at WGR550.com and the radio.com app, specifically on this Bills and Dolphins matchup, which we'll spend plenty of time previewing tonight. And looking more at the Miami Dolphins, not just for this season, but to me what's more interesting with the Miami Dolphins, which is the long term and what kind of threat they present to the Bills on the long term. 803-0550 is the phone number to get on the conversation tonight. Little hockey sprinkled in along the way. Eric Staal spoke today, first time as a member of the Buffalo Sabres. That still sounds strange. It always will sound strange. We are into the Stanley Cup Finals. We got the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Dallas Stars. Yes, that's right. I said finals. I don't care what the NHL says. They are wrong. It is a series of games. It is the finals. We don't say Eastern Conference Final. It's the finals. Everywhere else does it the other way. The NHL wants to say it this way. I'm going to continue to say finals. One of my pet peeves with the NHL, among many. I wrote a book on them. Pet peeves with the NHL. So we'll get into a little bit of the finals as well, but not a lot of it. Because it's going to be mainly football-driven tonight on the show. So feel free to chime in with your thoughts. You can also do so on Twitter, at SneakyJoeWGR, or right at the station account, at WGR550. And my overall thought on the Dolphins in today's show is thinking about them on the long term. I still, even though Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano are not playing in this game, I think the Bills should still win easily. I have more respect for this Dolphins roster than I think anybody did going into last season. Last season, they were tanking. And here comes the tank buster himself, Ryan Fitzpatrick, to derail that. But they did, at the end of the day, get the quarterback that they were tanking for anyway. In part, because, of course, Tua Tagovailoa, broken hip at Alabama. He falls a couple of picks. Joe Burrow has this best college season ever. And the Dolphins end up with Tua after all. So this game Sunday, I think the Bills should win. Even though they're on the road, even though they're missing three of their top four linebackers. That's not right. They're starting two linebackers in Edmonds and Milano. Forgot about A.J. Klein. A.J. Klein would be their third linebacker. He's listed as a starter. He plays a position that doesn't see the field a whole lot. But A.J. Klein is going to be very important for the Bills on Sunday, I would imagine, as would Tyler Matakevich and Tyrell Dodson. Those are your three linebackers. And that's going to be a weakness. One point I made in my fantasy article was Mike Gesicki, tight end for the Dolphins, is a guy you're going to want in your lineup. The Dolphins are, in for a fantasy conversation, the Dolphins already had Albert Wilson, their slot receiver, opt out for the season. Devontae Parker, their number one wide receiver, is banged up. He's questionable for the game, so he might not even play. And if he does, we'll see if he's able to make it through. He was dealing with a hamstring injury going into week one, and he wasn't able to finish the game against the Patriots. So even if he's active against the Bills, he could certainly be limited. The Dolphins don't have a lot of guys for targets to go to. Preston Williams is a very good wide receiver. And if Parker does not play, I would expect, or I would hope, that he's earned enough respect, even in limited action through two seasons, that the Bills would put Tre'Davious White on him and would shadow Preston Williams with Tre'Davious White. Not only because I think Preston Williams is a pretty darn good player, I don't think he's great, but he's kind of all Miami's got at wide receiver if Parker is not full go. Isaiah Ford, a seventh-round pick of theirs a couple of seasons ago, who's got 25 career catches, is in line to be their number two wide receiver. He was number two on their team in snap percentage at the wide receiver position last week against the Patriots. That's not much of a threat to me. Jakeem Grant, who, by the way, is dealing with an injury of his own. Now, he's going to play, but he's been dealing with an injury. He is probably playing as their number three receiver. He's really a return specialist. And then there's Mike Gesicki. So for fantasy, I'm not a big Mike Gesicki guy. I picked to have him in one league, and it was kind of forced. It was kind of the best of a bad situation. I don't like Gesicki season-long in fantasy. He's probably a pretty good tight end in the league, but there's not a lot of dynamic playmaking ability there for me. So he's not a guy I often have. But in this matchup, this specific matchup against the Bills, without Tremaine Edmonds, without Matt Milano, and without anybody competing with him for targets, especially in the middle of the field, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick's throwing to that tight end a lot on Sunday. And the Bills will do well to clog up the middle and prevent him from being able to do that. So Gesicki's a guy I'm saying to start in fantasy. But that's kind of the story of the Dolphins. It's similar to the Jets last week. The Bills, to open the season, got two division opponents that stink at wide receiver. In part because, of course, their guys are hurt. I don't think the Dolphins are that bad. I think Devontae Parker, I mean, where would he rank among AFC East wide receivers? After last season, the season he just had, he'd be in the top five. Diggs and Brown might be 1-2. Edelman, 3. Maybe not even Edelman, 3. Edelman, 3. Parker, 4 in that order. So he's a top four receiver to me, unless I have am glaringly omissing somebody. Parker's good, but he's injured. So, this Bills defense, even though they're banged up, especially in the middle of the field, I think should be able to stop the Dolphins. I think that they should be able to get to Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think they should be able to shut down any type of ground game that they have, even without their linebackers. The Dolphins are not, like, what is going on with them at running back? Myles Gaskin led them in snaps last week, and he wasn't all that dynamic. He didn't look that good. Matt Breida, I like as a player, but he only got like 15 snaps. And they have Jordan Howard as well, who got 9. So a trio combination of 3 average at best running backs doesn't scare me from the Miami Dolphins. I think the Bills should win this game. And I'm not going to say it's not interesting because the Dolphins could win this game. And then suddenly we're having a similar conversation as to what we were having before last week, which was, yeah, they're going to beat the Jets. But if they don't, how bad is it? And that'll be what it's like after Miami. But the more interesting part of the Dolphins is the long-term sustainability of what they're building. There's been a lot of stories written this week on a comment that Brian Flores made about the Bills and how they've built up their team, or how they've built up their culture under Sean McDermott.
Sean, Brandon, they've done an incredible job. I think it's about bringing in the right types of people. And in any business, it's about the people. So in his case, it's, you know, he's got the right people in place from a scouting standpoint with Joe Sheen, Brandon Bean. You know, they got a great staff over there. Same thing as from a coaching standpoint. They got a great staff from that standpoint. And then bringing in the right types of players. So they've certainly been a model. And Sean and, you know, what they've done is something that I've definitely looked at and said, hey, you know, if we were going to build something, we wanted to model it after a program, you know, that's certainly one that, you know, we and I referenced, you know, when we were trying to do some things over here.
That's Dolphins head coach Brian Flores. The Bills are a model of what they're trying to build. And given how the Dolphins have progressed since Brian Flores became their head coach, I like it. I like what they've got going on. I think that him being able to get 5 wins out of that roster last season is impressive. His defensive scheme seems to get the most out of his players. They have the young quarterback in place. We'll see if he's good. They'll find out. But they've got a guy. They've got a guy with potential. They've got a guy with a high ceiling. That's the scariest thing about the AFC East right now. That is the most terrifying thing for the Bills in the AFC East. I wrote a piece in the summer, or maybe back in the spring. Everything's kind of to get merged together at this point in 2020. This is probably before Cam Newton signs with New England, and I wrote about Tua being the biggest threat to the Bills in the AFC East on the long term. Of course, right now, the biggest threat to the Bills is the Patriots. Because that defense still probably is going to be pretty darn good. They showed to be in week one. And even though turnovers, it's very rare to carry that type of production over from year to year where you're at the top of the league in turnovers. New England's off to a good start getting 3 picks out of Fitz on week one. So don't get me wrong. I definitely would say the Patriots are the Bills' biggest threat this season. And considering the Bills are in win-now mode at this point, that's what we care more about. But don't dismiss the Dolphins as a long-term threat. I would tell you that in the next 5 years, they're your biggest threat. New England, who knows? It's an older roster. Who knows how much longer Bill Belichick will remain their head coach if he decides that he wants to retire at some point. There's no sign that's going to happen anytime real soon. But within 5 years, that could definitely happen. And Cam Newton's on a 1-year contract. If he has a big season for the Patriots, and he had a great first game, and he hits the open market, he's going to want to cash in. And maybe that's in New England. It certainly could be. But it could be somewhere else. Someone else could line up and be like, Cam, we made a mistake. We should have signed you last year. Here's $20 million. Here's $25 million bucks a year for 3 years. That could happen. And if that does happen, then it's not even close. Because Tua Tagovailoa, to me, does still have that elite ceiling that was worth tanking for before he got injured. Because that's the level of quarterback we were talking about. The Dolphins were tanking, and most people that I know and read and listen to were like, well, this is the year to do it because you got Tagovailoa coming into the draft. They're going to get Tua. It's going to be totally worth it. The health is not to just be dismissed. I'm going to do a lot of talking up about Tua in this segment as a long-term threat. But the health is an obvious concern. Because I don't see any big faults in who he is as a player. When he's healthy, he's got a cannon. But he's got the arm strength. He's got enough arm strength. He is accurate. He is so accurate. In the short to intermediate routes, Tua is just solid. He really reminds me of Drew Brees on those shorter throws. Every single time, it seems to be on the money. And maybe he did have a huge benefit of playing with 3 NFL wide receivers at Alabama. He certainly got some advantage. But that ball was on the money every time. It's not like he was missing throws and Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy were making circus catches and bailing him out and padding stats for him. They were padding stats, you know, yards after catch. But that ball, watching Tua at Alabama, it was there every time. It was right in the chest, on the money. Mobile, too, when he's healthy, poised as hell. And if he stays healthy, that's the AFC East rivalry. I don't think about the Jets in this regard anymore. I'm not throwing out the possibility that Sam Darnold could still be a good quarterback and even be a franchise quarterback, but it's not happening under Adam Gase. It is not happening under Adam Gase. And until they get the right coach in place, and until they get a team around Darnold or whoever becomes their quarterback if they decide to give up on it, some talent at wide receiver and on the offensive line, and if they could have a complete defense, I don't even want to think about the Jets. And I just went over the Patriots. I think they'll age out. They probably will age out. I mean, Belichick's the guy. You can't just dismiss the likelihood that he'll rebuild it. But who knows who's playing quarterback for them in the future? Who knows? If Cam leaves after this season, I mean, they're not going to be terrible. They're not going to be in a great draft position to pick a quarterback early. So that's a wild card. Tua's a threat, though. And the combination of his ceiling with Brian Flores and the defensive scheme and the culture that he's talking about instilling and really has instilled already in that club, I think the Dolphins are the biggest threat in the AFC East going forward. Now, it might not be all that close. When I say the Bills' biggest threat is the Dolphins on the long term, I don't really think anyone in the division is touching what the Bills are built, have built. Because if Allen continues what he did in week one throughout the course of the season, well, for one, that's the real progress that we've been talking about with Allen, and we're sold on our quarterback if that happens. And that final check mark is just, it's done. But who's close? Because the Bills have built up a great wide receiver core. They've built up a great quarterback. And I think the gap is pretty sizable. So I got the Dolphins at number two, but I don't got them very close. The best part about this season for the Bills is that it's sustainable. And the Patriots, we don't know how long they can sustain what they have right now. And the Dolphins, we don't know if they will actually end up building it up. I like the signs that they will, but they haven't seen Tua take a snap yet. I really want to see him take a snap, too. I'm so interested in what he is and how good he could be. And if he's as mobile, he's not like he was ever, you know, he was never Josh Allen with mobility. But that's a big part of them drafting him at third. Because if he's fragile and he can't get hit, then what's the point? The division is so interesting going forward. So interesting. Last night, we had a different division, seeing two young quarterbacks battle in that division. Joe Burrow throws for over 60 attempts. Baker Mayfield kind of silences the critics, at least for a week. I mean, they'll come right back if he has a bad game. Baker's leash is short. And I made the comparison yesterday, and I just talked a little bit about Sam Darnold, comparing Mayfield and Darnold. And I really, like, that. There's a young quarterback crop that is almost, it's like on the way out. Like, they're on their last straw. And I don't quite think Mayfield and Darnold are that. Like, they're not to where Trubisky is. I feel like if Trubisky has an awful half, it's over. Mitch Trubisky might be an awful half away from being done as the Bears quarterback. Mayfield, Darnold, they're at least a couple games, if not half a season, of bad play from getting pulled. That would be an interesting bet. Who gets pulled first, Mayfield or Darnold? Or maybe neither do. Maybe the betting odds would be on neither do. But there's a lot of interesting quarterback situations in the AFC right now. The Bills are one of them because Allen's got to get paid at some point. And we got to know how good he is before that happens. If he's as good as he was against the Jets, look out for a big contract. And we'll see if he could carry that over against the Dolphins. One other thing I want to say on this game before we take a break. And one thing I want to say about the Dolphins, this matchup. And maybe this circles all the way back to fantasy. Wrote my article at WGR550.com on fantasy options in this game. Little stardom sit-em. Josh Allen has to me become one of the most consistent quarterbacks in fantasy football. This week against the Dolphins, the only two quarterbacks I would start over him are Lamar Jackson, Patrick Mahomes. That's it. Allen's got the baseline of rushing, and an interesting stat on Allen as a runner. Against the Miami Dolphins, Josh Allen has ran for 318 yards in four games. That is over a fourth of his entire career rushing total. His career rushing total is 1,198 in 29 games. And Allen's got 318 in four games against the Dolphins. And honestly, who's to say he won't approach 100 on Sunday? If you were watching the Bills game, which I'm assuming most of you were, and didn't get a good look at what happened in that Patriots-Dolphins matchup in week one, like, the conversation around here this week has been what? That Josh Allen's running the ball too much? That why are we doing so many designed runs? That's what some fans are saying. Maybe it's not a large portion of the fan base, but some fans are talking about that. He had 6 designed runs against the Jets. Cam Newton had 14 designed runs against the Dolphins. And a big reason, the biggest reason he had a big game against the Dolphins was the fact that he was running as well as he did. Over 150 yards, I want to say, on Newton against the Dolphins last week. 150 yards passing, 75 on the ground. 15 carries for 75 yards, 2 touchdowns was Cam Newton on the ground against Miami. So, Allen, I would take that stat line right now. 14 design runs and a scramble, 75 yards on the ground and 2 touchdowns. The Bills are winning that game on Sunday. And I don't want to be limiting Josh Allen because we're worried about some faulty logic about him getting injured. All right, we're off and running. Bills, Dolphins on Sunday, 803-0550 is the phone number for your calls next. Do you think I'm right? Do you think I'm right in believing that Miami is the Bills' biggest threat, the biggest long-term threat in the AFC East? Let me know what you think. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
guys who are smart can tackle. You know, I think offensively they try to create situations where, you know, they got 2-3 guys moving at the same time, and can you and your other defensive backs get it handled? So, you know, Trey White, Levi, I mean, these guys do a good job as far as from a communication standpoint, you know, along with the safeties there, you know, kind of getting all that hashed out. But quickness, length, instincts, I think Trey has all those things. So does Levi. These guys are good players. And we've got a couple good corners also. I think the guys who are competitive, the guys who tackle, and the guys who make plays on the ball, that's, to me, that's what makes a good corner in this league.
Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, who I think I could qualify my first segment comments on being glowing. I think I had some glowing comments about Brian Flores. Listen, I'm not saying they're in the Bills league now or ever, but they're more likely to be there four years from now to me than the Patriots, and especially the Jets. The Jets are pretty close to a dumpster fire. The small bit of potential that it might seem like Sam Darnold's got left is what, to me, holds me back. Because I still, part of me wants to defend Darnold. It's difficult, though, when he has a game like he just did against the Bills. I know he didn't have help. The offensive line is improved, but it still doesn't look good. His weapons are maybe the worst in the league. His coach is just a strange cat. And he's got a lot of excuses. Like, fair excuses as to why he's not developing. Why he's not seeing a step forward in his play. But he made some throws on Sunday that were just abysmal. I mean, it wasn't just the receiver's fault. Because there were a couple throws where he had guys open and he just missed completely. And, like, Allen will have those. Allen will certainly have those. He had two. He missed Dawson Knox open in the end zone. He missed John Brown open the end zone. That was 14 points right there. Gone. But to me, the reason I would, of course, have Allen ahead is there are mistakes like that, but it seems like they're going away more and more. And the running will always just be there with Allen, and it's not with Darnold. Darnold's not a statue. He's not, like, he is athletic, but Allen is one of the most athletic quarterbacks we've seen in 10 years. How many could you put above him in rushing? Like, he's almost to the level of Cam Newton. His numbers and his athleticism and the way he runs is so similar to Cam Newton. That's really who he has to be compared to. So Newton's on his level in the last 10 years. Lamar Jackson's on his own level, so he's above. That's two. Russell Wilson is that, but Wilson, did he ever even put up the gaudy numbers that Allen has? He certainly hasn't, I know, in touchdowns. Russell Wilson's best rushing season would have been, you know, 5-6 years ago, 2014, 849-6. And Allen's really had that season twice. Not quite there with the rushing yards, the totals, but the touchdowns were there. And the average was there. Darnold doesn't have that. Deshaun Watson's maybe on that level. For Watson, I think more about escapability than I do pure rushing totals. But he does have them. Allen's got the baseline to be a good quarterback because the running will always be there. And I can't believe how many people seem to want to take it away from him. There was a poll on the GR Twitter account earlier in the week asking about, would you rather take more rushing attempts away or keep them the same? And it was basically 50-50. And I want to hear from the fans that don't want him to run as much, because we have information. We have evidence that the narrative about running quarterbacks getting injured is just simply not true. Sal has tweeted about this week. I've tweeted about it this week. There are articles being written on websites right now about looking at former running quarterbacks. I broke them down one by one, and I think Tuesday. Like Randall Cunningham, Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Russell Wilson, Steve Young. Like, these guys were not getting injuries running. Did you see Joe Burrow last night? Did you see the video of him getting hammered in the pocket? Doesn't that seem more dangerous? Doesn't standing in a circle, a half circle, surrounded by, what, 10 250 to 350 pound men who are wrestling each other in the trenches, falling and diving and being pushed back into you, doesn't that inherently seem more dangerous and sound more dangerous? Burrow was getting smoked in the pocket last night. And you can't tell me that him scrambling to the outside, where it's him versus one guy, is more dangerous. Because to me, that's insane. The only fair argument against Allen running is the fumbles. That's it. And what is the fix for that? Now, it's actually, I think it's overstated how bad Josh Allen's fumbling problem is. Because if you look at the leaders in the league last season in terms of fumbles, they're all quarterbacks. And they all were generally around the same total that Allen had. The guys at the top, Daniel Jones, Carson Wentz, I think I read a stat the other day, has 50 fumbles in 57 games. So it's not unique, I guess I'll say, that Josh Allen fumbles as much as he does. But man, doesn't that ball seem to come out so easily? That seems to me to be an easier fix. I'm looking at the fumble totals from last year in the league. It goes even further. I mean, you got to go to 27th, I think, to get to a running back. 21st. Chris Carson had the most fumbles in the league as a running back at 21. The top 20 are all quarterbacks. Allen was third. He was third with 14 fumbles. Carson Wentz had 16. Daniel Jones had 18. Those were the two with more. Then right behind Allen, Kyle Allen had 13 in fewer starts, by the way. Gardner Minshew had 13 in fewer starts. Jameis Winston had 12. Sam Darnold had 11 in three fewer games. Kirk Cousins had 10. Jimmy Garoppolo had 10. Jared Goff had 10. Deshaun Watson had 10. Lamar Jackson had 9. Joe Flacco only played 8 games. He had 8 fumbles. 20th in the league was Derek Carr with 7, which is half of what Allen had. But 20th in the league was 7. So his fumbling problem is not unique, but it does need to be corrected. It needs to be improved. I don't know if that means holding the ball higher and tighter, but maybe he picked up a bad habit from LeSean McCoy. Honestly. Now, the thing about McCoy was, McCoy would hold the ball in one hand, and he would be pretty careless with it. But McCoy's never had a fumbling problem. McCoy, either because of his awareness or because he just has such a strong grip on the ball, he never, ever seemed to fumble it when he was holding the ball out like that. And I don't know. Allen doesn't do the same thing, so probably it's not even worth bringing up. But that's the only thing that needs to be corrected with his running. And that might be next on the list of things that he needs to fix. Short intermediate throws, check. Footwork, the angles at which his shoulders are when he throws, his technique, a lot of his mechanics. Check it in pencil. I don't want to put that permanent yet, but I'll check it in pencil. The deep throw, I guess we got to see on the deep throw. I think the longest pass he threw was 24 yards against the Jets. Like, we didn't see a bomb. I think they're saving it. I really do think they're saving that for a tougher opponent or for late in a game when they need it. But there was no deep shot, so we don't know yet whether he's improved that. And then right next to me is that fumbling issue. Because even though a lot of other quarterbacks have a lot, a fumble a game, like that's got to get better. It's got to get better. 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll get to some calls right after this timeout. We'll talk a little hockey, too, before we get out of here. Last call in the nightcap right after this on WG.
A rather large amount of money, and on that side of the ball, with they got the corner situation, I'm sure they think solidified and good players there. They've got guys that they've brought from Coach Flores' system in New England and added those pieces, and they drafted a lot of players on that side of the ball, and then they've got their front. Obviously, everyone knows they got Shaq from us last season, so they're very talented on that side of the ball and a good football team overall.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott speaking with the media. No, speaking with Howard and Jeremy earlier today. He did also speak with the media. You can check both out on demand at WGR550.com. Hope you like listening to Sean McDermott. There's a lot of it. There's a lot of it on demand. Bills and Dolphins under 48 hours away. 1 o'clock on Sunday in Miami in front of a limited capacity crowd of, I believe, 11,000. So we'll see some fans in the stands. The big story going into the game is injuries for the game. The Bills are missing both starting linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. I personally did not really notice A.J. Klein in the Bills' Week 1 matchup against the Jets, but we'll see, I'm sure, lots of him, as he is now playing a very important piece or important role for the Bills on Sunday as really their number one linebacker. 803-0550 is the phone number. Let's go to Buzz in Buffalo. Buzz, what's up, man?
Joe, it's nice to have you back on the air, bro. How you doing?
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good. So after Milano went out, like, you really noticed the difference between Klein and Milano. Like, there's a difference there. I mean, Milano's going to get paid by somebody. Hopefully it's the Bills. But I think what I started to see after – I think McDermott or Leslie Frazier, for that matter, made an adjustment after Klein wasn't doing – he wasn't really great in coverage. And I'm only getting the TV beat. I'm not watching all 22, okay? So, but what I saw is that they put Micah Hyde on Herndon because, the Jets were targeting Herndon as much as they could because they got nothing else. So I think this week you're going to see a lot of Micah Hyde on Gesicki. And I think you might be playing just straight up I know the Bills play a lot of zone, but I think you might be seeing more man on the outside and in the slot and have Micah Hyde manned up in the middle. And I will agree totally 100% with you on that Miami's the big threat going forward. Except Belichick, but aside from that, I agree that Miami's the big threat going forward. So good to have you back on the air. You have a good night.
Thanks, Buzz. Appreciate the call. I'm looking forward to seeing these other guys. Tyrell Dodson, Sal was talking about on the Football Friday Roundtable as being fast and a guy that can cover sideline to sideline. So we'll see. I don't think that Sal was implying, or like I heard Steve Tasker talking about Dodson speed this afternoon as well, that he is as athletic as a Matt Milano and a Tremaine Edmonds. The Bills are certainly, don't get me wrong, losing a big element of their defense on Sunday. But I'm wondering how much they will really need it. The Dolphins' weapons are depleted. Not as depleted as the Jets were last week, but they are depleted. And find a way to shut down Mike Gesicki over the middle of the field, and I don't see an advantage the Dolphins have anywhere. Double cover him if you have to. I don't think Mike Gesicki is maybe a player worthy of double covering, but staggered coverage, something. Like, he's the guy you got to watch out for. Much more football tomorrow. Nate Geary will have Sports Talk Saturday from 11 until 2. My brother Lou DiBiase kicks off Bills coverage 7 a.m. bright and early on Sunday morning with Breakfast with the Bills. Jeremy and Nate at 8. Myself back at 10 with Nate, leading up to kickoff for the Bills and Dolphins all on Sunday, all throughout this weekend. Maybe Nate gets to a little hockey tomorrow, I don't know, but we'll throw in some hockey here at the end. Eric Staal is a Buffalo Sabre. It's still strange to say, but spent a whole show on that on Wednesday. It's an interesting trade. It is interesting in that I don't know why, even a couple of days later, why the Wild did it. I mean, Marcus Johansson, I think I was the biggest Marcus Johansson fan in Buffalo. I think he generates play. He's a good zone entry man. He's capable of carrying the puck. He was maybe second on the team at forward in terms of carrying the puck next to Jack Eichel. I think Dahlin would probably be second. So he had that, but he wasn't a natural center. And even though I think he was far better than a lot of people gave him credit for down the middle, Staal is a natural center. Eric Staal is a natural center, and I don't think he'll have any issues playing as the second-line center for this season. We wondered, and we were still wondering, the last time I was talking about this, whether he would actually report. Because honestly, you know Eric Staal did not want this trade. You know it. And how could you blame him? You can't blame him. He's about to be a 36-year-old NHL former All-Star. I think he even made the All-Star game last year. Who's been an important player all his career, is still productive, has to know that at 36, he doesn't have many more shots to win a Stanley Cup. And if he's not going to, and he, you know that, by the way, wasn't his motivating factor, because Staal had been, and I talked about this with a couple of Wild guys on a podcast, Minnesota Wild guys on a podcast a couple nights ago. The Wild had a trade in place on multiple occasions with the Boston Bruins at deadlines who were trying to acquire Staal, and the Bruins could not convince him to come there. Think of that. If you really don't think that Eric Staal was upset about this trade. The Bruins, on multiple occasions, couldn't get him to come there because he was driving distance from his hometown of Thunder Bay, Ontario, in Minnesota. And he spoke about that today, that he was shocked, and his family was shocked because they've gotten comfortable there. So not only... And the other point, by the way, as to why you know he didn't want to be dealt, he filled, according to Pierre LeBrun, he filled his 10-team no-trade list with Stanley Cup contenders. And if you don't want to be traded and you're a veteran player like that, well, of course, who's most likely to trade for you? Those teams that think they're one piece away from winning the Stanley Cup. And of course, he didn't account for the likelihood that a team like the Sabres could get him. And now, it does suck for Staal. He's not near his family, and he's not on a team that's primed and ready to win the Stanley Cup. But that's the situation we're in. And he's a professional. He's going to show up. And if he really didn't want to come here, should have put it on his list. In terms of what he is as a player and how much he's going to help the Sabres, I don't think it can be overstated how much of a win this deal is. The Sabres filled their biggest hole. Kevin Adams, in his first move for this season, not for the long term yet, we'll see what Dylan Cousins is, but for this season, Kevin Adams has already filled his biggest hole, which is second line center. And that's a pretty darn good start for a guy that nobody would have told you was qualified for that job. But, hey, if all we have to go on is an Eric Staal, Marcus Johansson trade so far, I'll consider him qualified. So that's a pretty good start. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to today's show. Thanks for listening throughout the week. It is good to be back. It is good to be back, especially in time for football season and in time for that Sabre trade this week. I'll be back next week, hopefully talking about a Bills win over the Dolphins, hopefully 2-0, going into an interesting matchup in week 3. So until Sunday, where I'll be on Bills coverage starting at 10 a.m., I will talk to you then. Everybody have a good weekend. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and I'll talk to you here on the Nightcap on Monday. This has been the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
You're listening to the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase, live from the Dunn Tire Studios. Dunn Tire. It's a done deal. WGR Sports Radio 550.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.